ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Just as I came in the door to the enthusiastic welcome, which enthused me to join you all in dancing, which I thank you for, I saw a sign that I would be speaking on the relevance of Krishna consciousness in the modern age, something like that. I wasn't aware that I was supposed to be speaking on that, but anyway, I'd chosen to speak on a topic which is relevant to this, because Krishna consciousness is a big subject and the modern age is a big subject. So I was going to speak on one major aspect of modern life and Srila Prabhupada's perspective on that and the Shastric perspective on that. Srila Prabhupada came to give us Krishna. He gave Krishna as his holy name, as the deities, as the society of devotees, as prasadam. He introduced us to the holy dhams in so many ways. And he also gave us a whole way of life based on Krishna consciousness. And he wanted to make the whole world Krishna conscious, which would mean a completely different a culture, an outlook on life, and for the purpose of promoting that culture and outlook on life, the Krishna conscious outlook that Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish, he would often point out the defects in the present Zeitgeist, to use that trendy word, ethos, I could say. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the symptoms of Kali Yuga are stated, and I wanted to speak on one half of a verse, actually, which speaks of one very prominent symptom of Kali Yuga. The book hasn't come, but anyway, I can recite the half verse, which I wanted to speak on. Shukadeva Goswami, in describing to Parikshit Maharaj the symptoms of Kali Yuga, says as one of the very first symptoms, Vitam eva kalo nrinam guna chara guno dayaha. Vitam means wealth, or money. So, vitam, eva, certainly, kalo, in Kali Yuga, nunam, among men, janma, a birth, used in here in the sense of having a high family or being considered prestigious in society, achara, which means behavior, in other words, someone who has money is, well, that goes with the next. Janma, chara, guna. Guna means quality. So, as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, someone who wears a suit and tie is considered a gentleman. Never mind how they got the money to have a expensive suit and tie, or what else they do. But if someone has money, they're considered a gentleman. Janma chara guna udayaha. Here comes the book. Guna udaya. Uday means arising. So, anyway, I'll just read out the first chapter 2, verse number 2. I believe it should be.
Yes, this is 2.
I'll just read a little. the first paragraph of this purport deals with this subject. Translation, in Kali Yuga, wealth alone will be considered the sign of a man's good birth, proper behavior, and fine qualities. Purport, in the age of Kali, this purport is by Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Sridharananda Maharaj, Gopi Prabhupada Prabhu, principally. In the age of Kali, a man is considered high class, middle class, or low class merely according to his financial status, regardless of his knowledge, culture, and behavior. In this age, there are many great industrial and commercial cities, like Coventry, the city of peace and reconciliation, we saw as we drove in. And the next thing we saw was the football stadium. They're not very good at football. No one's good. There's only one or two clubs that are good, and all the rest are no good, right? It's just all disappointment. Everyone's disappointed because they want their team to win, but only one or two teams win. So everyone else is just hoping against hope. So, in this, there are many commercial cities with luxurious neighborhoods reserved for the wealthy. Do you have luxurious neighborhoods reserved for the wealthy? Yeah, I see. Although the really rich people don't live in Coventry at all. The really, really rich people, they live in London or Windsor or somewhere like that, in the home counties, mostly. On beautiful tree-lined roads within apparently aristocratic houses, it is not unusual to find many perverted, dishonest, and sinful activities taking place. According to Vedic criteria, a man is considered high class if his behavior is enlightened, and his behavior is considered enlightened if his activities are dedicated to promoting the happiness of all creatures. Every living being is originally happy because in all living bodies there is an eternal spiritual spark that partakes of the divine conscious nature of God. When our original spiritual awareness is revived, we become naturally blissful and satisfied in knowledge and peace. An enlightened or educated man should endeavor to revive his own spiritual understanding, and he should help others experience the same sublime consciousness. Take a note of the number. Yeah, so, following this analysis of Shastra. One thing in this chapter, the bad qualities of Kali Yuga are related. We should understand this to be generalizations. It's not that everyone is greedy after money. It's not that everyone has got all bad qualities in all respects, but it gives us a general picture of this, of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to re-establish Vedic culture. When we say re-establish, that statement is based on the understanding that previously Vedic culture was all over the world. You won't get taught that in the schools or universities, but the pre-Christian culture of the Western world has been almost as far as possible obliterated from memory, but it appears that the Druids, who were the priests of the pre-Christian culture, they were very close to Vedic culture or practicing Vedic culture in another form, Druids in this country, and different kinds of people in different parts of the world. So in the Vedic culture, the basis of Vedic culture, life in this world. What is the purpose? What are we living for? Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma is often translated as religion, but it means much more than religion. It's one of several key words in Vedic culture, which is not... There's no translation for that, exact translation. Dharma means not just religion, but an understanding of the universe and our function within it. Dharma artha, this word artha has two principal meanings. One of them is meaning, and another is money. Here in this, vittam eva kalonrinam. Vitta means wealth and artha means money. So they're pretty much synonymous. Kama means desire. So satisfaction of desire is accepted as part of human life, but within the boundaries given by dharma. That is a major difference between Kali Yuga and more civilized yugas, in as much as the need to satisfy our sensual propensities, eating, sleeping, sex, all these things, that is to be regulated by dharma, that is in dharmic life. So kama and ultimately moksha, liberation from material existence. But today, artha is the artha, money is the meaning of life. And everything in the modern world is commercialized. Everything is linked to money. Even as I was saying, we saw the stadium of Coventry City Football Club. Yeah, and it's all sponsored. There's this stand and that stand. It's all got the names of different companies. I mean, at one time it might have been an innocent kind of game in which people just ran around in there, but it's all money. It's big money. Maybe not in Coventry, but it's still, I mean, I'm sure the football players earn a lot more than everyone else, probably more than, they probably the best players bring, even for Coventry, which is not a very important club, I think. They probably earn more than all of the people put here together, yeah. For their amazing ability to kick a ball, which it doesn't really benefit anyone. Sorry, Yadunandan, he's a great football fan from India. So everything is commercialized, and whether we like it or not, we live in a society in which money is central, and acquisition of money is central to our life. It's not that dharma is central to our life. Even if we're religious, practically, or even if we want to be Krishna conscious, practically, to live our life in this world, we have to have money. It's just the way everything has been set up. And if we say this, and people, generally they don't understand what we're talking about, because they can't even imagine a societal setup which doesn't run on money. They just presume that money is the central thread of society. I'll get back to that a little later. Money is in everyone's mind. Everyone's life is dominated by earning money. You have to go to work. You have to find a job. Of course, you can live on the dole, but you don't get much money. And it's not considered prestigious. So everyone has to work. You can also become a criminal. That's one way to get money. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying that it's also, why do people become criminals? It's not that they, the main thing is not the pleasure they get out of breaking into houses and stealing old women's handbags in supermarkets, but they want the money. It's utilitarian. So everyone's, especially in the modern age, everyone's life is dominated by the need to get. Dominated means your life, everyone's life centers around work. Education centers around work. You're getting educated so you can get a job to earn some money. And then when you get a job, you earn money, and most of your life goes away. Even when you're not actually doing your work, then you're maintaining your body so that you can work. Or you're going to work, getting caught in a traffic jam. You're buying a car and maintaining a car, which is mainly used for going to work. And then when you're too old to work, then they retire you. And if you're lucky, you get a pension. We don't know in future there'll still be pensions, because they'll be eaten up by the charity fund for Iraq and Syria. We have to send things to these countries like bombs and missiles and things like that. There won't be any money left for the poor old people at home. So everyone's life is dominated by money and anxiety, because the way it's set up now, it's enjoy now and pay later, but then you're just suffering your whole life in debt. And any time the carpet can be pulled from underneath you, and then you're just left, the house that you thought was yours is no longer yours, and home sweet home is no longer the house that you thought was yours, but you're living under a bridge. It happened to many people in America recently, that they couldn't afford, they lost their job, they couldn't pay for their home, and then they became homeless. So many beggars and homeless people in America, many of whom were previously highly paid people who just can't get a job now. And so everyone's in anxiety. You don't know if you get a job. Even now, the government of America's in a situation where they can't pay their bills. And so people, the government workers aren't going to get paid now. You saw that? It's in the news today. You can go to work, but you won't get paid. No, India, they still pay the government people, and they make it up with little bakshish they accept here and there. So it's consumer society. It's set up like that, with the idea that the people have to work. The prime function of everyone is to work, and they earn money, and you give them a little time so they can buy things, and that runs the economy on. That's not your line exactly. Yours is accountancy, right? You just keep the cogs of the economic system running. That's the oil. Is it money or is it oil that runs the modern world? So, petrodollars, you see, that term is there. It's the whole economic system is so vast and complex that even the economists, seems like they can't understand what's going on. I mean, more than laymen do. So the whole idea is that you work, and they give you a little time, and then you have to frantically buy things, and mostly things that you don't need, and then you get back to work again. And the things that you buy, that keeps other people in work. And so it runs on like that. It's all based on earning and consuming, spending. And the emphasis on money has so many bad effects. Cheating, for instance, corruption, exploitation, competition. The employers want to pay less and the employees want to get more. And it's so tightly tuned, because the employers, they want to pay more because they want to get more profits, but not only do they want to get more profits, but if their expenses go up, they have to charge more to keep their expenses, to get their business running. And if they charge more, then their competitors can undercut them. And in this way, the small businessmen go out of business and it all goes to big businessmen to make the whole system very simplified. And then power gets concentrated in the hands of a few. It's a whole syndrome in which people become money conscious because you have to get money. Advertisements, they stoke our desire to buy things because you can't keep the consumer society running unless people buy things. But we don't need so many things. We need, okay, here's a little Hindi, roti kapra makan. Food, clothing and shelter. And in a cold country like England, that may expand a little bit. Shelter includes not just a house, but some heating is required. These are our basic needs. But in the modern age, we need iPods, iPads, I need so many things. You need a car. It's very difficult to live in the modern world without a car. The society is set up that, because the place of your work is going to be some distance from your place of residence, so you have to drive to get there. And so many things we need. Artificial necessities. And advertisements make us want to get more and more things. We could all have very simple little cars, but for prestige, we need to get a big, expensive car. And because if the companies were to actually make good cars, which they have been able to do practically since they started making them, cars that would last for 50 years, then they'd go out of business because people would buy a car and they wouldn't buy any more. So planned obsolescence, which just means cheating, actually. But the cars are specifically designed with expert researchers and engineers. They make cars and computers and all kinds of objects. They're specifically designed to start breaking down just after the guarantee period is over. And then they charge you a lot for repairs and new parts, so you think, oh, what's the use? Just buy a new one. And then we haven't finished paying for the old one, and then and it goes on and on like this. So it's cheating is built in, and the advertisements put us in this conscious spend, spend, buy, get this, get that. And other results of this are that relationships break down because people are money conscious, and that becomes the central point of life. And so parents are not parents in the way they used to be. Mothers are not mothers in the way they used to be. Because the mother is busy working, she doesn't have time to look after her children. Why is she working to look after her children, but she doesn't have time to look after them? So they send the kids to a kindergarten while the mother's out working, and then the kids come when they're a little older, they can come home and they can get something out of the fridge and stick it in the microwave. But the mother is doing it all for the children, and she buys them things, but she hasn't got time to be a mother in the traditional sense of the term. So relationships break down because I have to get more money. It's a competitive society based on money and what you can buy, sense gratification. So people, of course, again, this is all generalized, but I think you can see the pattern. I'm not talking some science fiction story here. It's our life as we are living it in the world today. So then when money becomes prominent and sense gratification becomes prominent, then friends means people who help me in my sense gratificatory pursuits. Now friend means someone on Facebook. The definition changed. It became more remote. Love becomes something that, well, try it out for a year or two. Maybe less. Love between people. Everything becomes very shallow as we become more and more centered on money. And the mothers, they think, well, if I send my kids to a good school and give them clothes and give them the latest gadgets, then I've done my job. Meanwhile, the kid is unhappy because they don't have the mother's love. In the dharmic culture, of course, there is economics, artha, dharma, artha. But it's regulated by dharma. And actually, money is not a central factor at all. For the Vaishyas, money is important. But even then, it may not be money. Vitta literally means wealth. So in Vedic culture, who is considered wealthy? Gavayo dhanavan, dhanyavan, dhanavan. Who has got cows and grains? That is considered wealth. And that's actually very practical and useful. If there's food, that's practical wealth. This Britain imports how much of its food? Maybe 90%? If there's any breakdown at any time in the supply chain, then very quickly we're going to find that our iPods and our iPads aren't going to help us. We can't eat nuts and bolts, and we can't eat iPads or iPods either. And even gold. We may have gold, but that won't help us. If the basic necessities are roti, kapra, makan, food, clothing and shelter. And the immediate need of everyone, daily need, is food. So the first item of wealth is to have a good stock of grains and many cows. So Vaishyas in particular, they're interested in that. In Vedic culture, Brahmanas, they're not particularly interested in money. And although you're supposed to give them money, people who have wealth are supposed to give it to Brahmanas, but then they're not supposed to keep it. And Kshatriyas, they also tax the Vaishyas, but for the purpose of performing civic services, administrative functions, and for the Kshatriyas, they keep also stocks of grains and ghee in times of emergency. And they give away in yajñas, they give away to brahmanas who then give away. So instead of buying and purchase, there was a culture of the rich man, kshatriya or vaishya, they may have some fine clothing, and they give it away. They give it away to the shudras. And unused cloth they may give to brahmanas. So it's not a culture of earning. It's not money at every... Just like, for instance, the barber, his duty is to cut people's hair, to cut their nails, to attend weddings and all these things. He doesn't get paid for doing that. He just does it because that's what he's supposed to do. And then at the time of he'll have a little land for growing the vegetables. Everyone would have a little land for growing vegetables. You don't need much to grow for a family. And then at the time of harvest, those who are producing grains, they'll give him enough grains to keep him going till the next harvest. And then clothes are given away to people like barbers in functions like weddings, which barbers attend. And in this way it runs on. So there aren't iPods and iPads to buy anyway. So people are not in the consciousness that I need to get more money, because money is not part of life. Only for the Vaishyas who may be doing business. Some of them may be doing trading. Not all of them do trading. This greed or this desire to get more and more objects, it's not part of life. I can see in Russia, I first went to Russia before the communist regime was dismantled. And I've been going there pretty much since the 1980s. And we see that still, and especially in the more rural areas of Russia, people are not very much concerned about earning money because that's the culture that they were raised in. In the communist world, everyone was paid, but there was nothing to buy. So the people weren't greedy. You could stand in a long line and buy meat and all these things. The basic necessities were there and not much else. So when there's nothing to buy, people aren't greedy. And there's no use to advertise things to buy because there's nothing to buy. So I'll tell a little story. I told it several times. A friend of mine, a devotee, this was maybe 20 years ago. He was constructing an ashram in rural Karnataka. And he was from America and he wanted the work to go fast because that's the American outlook. And the people, local people come late, if they come at all, do a little work at their own pace, go home early, relaxed. So he was getting upset and he said to the contractor, "Hey, I want the work to go faster." It reminds you of the Rudyard Kipling. "Here lies the fool who tried to hurry the East." Something like that. So he said to the contractor, who spoke some English, that, "Look, I tell them I'll pay them double, but they should work harder." And the contractor said, no, don't pay them double. Don't pay them double. It won't work. But he's from America. They pay them and they'll work better. Maybe they think they're not getting enough money. So he arranged through someone else who spoke English to pay them at the end, because they're being paid daily, paid them double. And no one came to work the next day. He said to the contractor came and said, "Well, no one came to work. What happened?" He said, "I don't know. I paid them double and no one came." You paid them double. That's why they didn't come. They have enough money for the next day, so why should they come? Because anyway, what can you buy? You can only buy rice, and mostly they all have rice anyway, because their property hadn't been taken over by Reliance yet. But now, anyway, that's another thing. The government's cooperating with the big businesses to just take over people's lands, and then they complain about Maoists. So what do you need money for? They don't have many necessities, which is why they're not so eager to work anyway. And if they get more money, then why should they work? What are they going to do with more money? They don't have any thought. I can go to the city and I can watch a movie and this and that. That was that time. Now there's TV in every household. Not every, but it's getting that way in India. So a completely different outlook on life. We just take it for granted that everyone has to work to get money and that's how you live. That's maybe one reason why devotees also, they can't understand Srila Prabhupada's talking of varnashram communities, because they always say, "Where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money?" But it's a completely different economic concept. In the Vedic culture or traditional culture, economic considerations are there, but social considerations are more. That's why in building that new temple in Mayapur, they don't employ local workers. They did in the beginning, but they'll always, if there's a puja, they'll take a day off or a few days or off work. If someone in the family dies, they'll take a day off work. If anything, practically, family died, they got a call from Bombay where one of their relatives is living, someone died, okay, they take a day off. So they brought workers from Bihar and UP because once they're there, they've got nothing else to do but work anyway. So people are working, but the social obligation comes first, not earning. So if there's a wedding in the family, they have to attend that. Even their boss won't like it. They don't care because their family is more important to them than their boss. There's a puja, some special puja they're invited to. They have to go to that. And they're not thinking, I have to earn money, I have to do my job. Now, in the modern context, we'd think, well, that's very bad because we've been trained in another way in the West world. You have to work, you have to do your job. That's the main thing. That's your dharma, practically. But in Vedic culture, certainly working, it's not really earning, but doing one's duty that is there. But it's work is there, but it's not that work and earning money and spending money is the central point of society. I'm just talking on material principles here, not spiritual principles. Even if people are very religious, but for most people, the social factor means family, friends, community. This comes first, and they all look after each other. So even if you don't work, then, of course, everyone has to work, but if you get in trouble with your boss, or so the boss is not the most, he's not the person who dictates your life to you. Maybe people would think that's nice. The boss doesn't dictate, because bosses are not very popular people generally, but they're people you have to live under, but you just can't avoid it because you have to earn money. So in the Vedic culture, work is certainly there. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyada karmanaha, that without work no one can maintain his body. One has to work. One has to. Nahi supta. This is from Hitopadesh. Nahi suptasya singhasya pravishanti mukhe mrigam. The lion is the king of the jungle, but he just can't lie on the ground and say, okay, animals, walk in my mouth. He has to go out and get, he has to go out and capture some animal. So, later in Gita, Krishna says that. Famous verse, ananyas chintayanto mang yejanaf pariyupasate te sham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Even if you don't work, Krishna says, if you're fully dedicated, if someone who's fully dedicated to me, I will provide everything for them. But the general rule is sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyada karmanaha. One has to work. One cannot maintain the body without some kind of work. So work is there in Vedic culture, but it's not that work is the culture. It's not that it dominates everything. And working and buying and consuming. The modern age is the consumer age. And the word for consumer in Sanskrit is bhukta, which is derived from the term bhoga, which means, it's often translated as enjoyment, but it actually means consumption. So in Vedic culture, the work and consumption are minimized. They're not the center of life. Minimized, especially for those who are spiritually interested, for Vaishyas and Shudras, especially, they're interested in material enjoyment. But for those who are more advanced, especially the Brahmanas, their aim is to minimize, to zero consumption, or just minimally. They should just take whatever they need for maintenance of the body and nothing more. That is the aim of those who are spiritually advanced. But in the modern world, it's not dominated by spiritually advanced people. That, I think, you can all agree. it's not dominated by real brahmanas. There are certainly many intelligent people and intellectual people who are very influential in various ways, but they don't have a truly spiritual object of life, and they're no real kshatriyas either. The world is dominated by not exactly vaishyas also, because vaishyas is but money-minded people. People are expert at manipulating markets, and they dictate. We can see that the governments of the world, they're the top politician. It's well known by people who don't just accept the usual outlook on life, and there are many such people nowadays who have, many people, that's why there are, who have realized that it's the big corporations who dictate to the politicians. And it doesn't really matter, doesn't really make that much difference who's officially the head of a, political head of a country, because they all have to dance to the tune of the big companies. So, people for whom getting more and more money is their life, and those who are successful in that, they're dominating the world, and their value, the people who are interested in getting lots of money, they impart that value to others, and so the whole society becomes money-centered, money-oriented. And education, this whole idea, everyone should have an education. Now in India, Bharat. There's the move for RTE, right to education. Every child should be, in English, isn't it? RTE. The idea that every child should be educated, and this is thought to be something very good, that every child gets the opportunity to be educated. But actually, that's required so that the industries can develop. The industrialists who pose as philanthropists, and they promote things like midday meals for children so they can go to school, but their idea, they may not even be fully consciously aware of that, but their idea is that we need a highly educated workforce to promote so that our businesses can run on. And if there are many people who are educated, in the bargaining, we're in an advantage, because if there are 500 people for one job, then we can pay them less. And we can work them, that's what's going on in the IT industry in India. They bring in young people, they work them until they almost literally, actually literally collapse. Many IT workers, they have nervous breakdowns, which is another good business, because then you have hospitals for them. And they pay them minimally, and then when they're completely burned out, they just take more people. That's all. So although it appears that education for all, but it sounds like a nice idea, but it serves the interest of the people who are controlling the money markets. And if you think about it, if someone, for instance, is going to be drilling holes in the road, earning money like that, he doesn't really need to go to school for 12 years, if at all. And in a more traditional, simple society, someone who's going to be a potter, they just need to learn how to make pots. They don't need to learn what are sines and cosines. Do you all know what sines and cosines are? Who knows what sines and cosines are? You've all heard of it. You all studied it at school. Does anyone remember what they are? No. We know what an angle is. What is pi, apart from the number, what is it in relation to a circle? Anyone? Okay, all right, some people know. Yeah, okay, very good. Some people know. She's a mathematics teacher. She didn't tell us what a sine and a cosine is. She knows. But I just gave that example, is that we all study it at school. Still, they still teach it at school. I guess so. Sines and cosines are essential in geometry and all kinds of things. It's useful if you go on to be an engineer, but otherwise, if you're a taxi driver, you don't need to know what a sine or a cosine is. Even an accountant doesn't have to know. No. You don't use... there are different areas of accountancy, I guess. In some areas, there'd be statistics and bell curves and all that kind of thing. But not in the line you're in. It is, yeah. Yeah, okay. So... the education is to make people, every person should be a unit in the economic machine. They should be a worker and a consumer. Earn money, spend it. And not only at school do you get taught all these things, most of which you forget, but you're taught also, not directly, but your life is to be a worker and a consumer. Work, 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 get a job, work, earn money, spend it. So this is the education. And even people who talk about human values and we have to help people, they're all completely locked into this way of thinking. Just like that, we need to get everyone all the children should be educated. Srila Prabhupada said, no, why? That was something with Srila Prabhupada. He said many things which go against the grain of the whole modern way of thinking. That was one thing. Why? Srila Prabhupada said, why should everybody get educated? No. Why? What's the point? Of course, education is there for everyone, but just like the potter's son learns how to make pots, that's an education. He doesn't need to go to school to learn that. Nowadays, at school you can learn how to run a household. They have home studies. What's it called? Home science. They give it the name science to make it things like how to wash the dishes and things. Really? I know because I asked some of the girls there when I was at school, what's this home science you're doing? They said, well, it's how to wash the dishes. They told me, they said, really, how to wash the dishes? So you have to learn to put the fatty objects last, and then how much washing liquid to use. I mean, you could learn it from your mother if she wasn't out at work. So it becomes somewhat ridiculous. So their whole like this human values, moral values, but it's all based on the understanding of man as an economic unit. And even there's communism and capitalism and socialism, yeah. But it's all of these concepts which dominated the 20th century, communism and capitalism, they're all based on the understanding of people as economic entities, not understanding us to be spiritual entities. And that the goal of life is to understand who we are and get freed from the cycle of birth and death. Both communism, well, socialism, communism, put them in one basket, and capitalism in another basket. They're all based on the same conception of man as an economic unit. It's just how to organize it in different ways, that's all. Either in a competitive way or in a cooperative. Capitalism is supposed to be competitive and communism is supposed to be cooperative. But the whole idea, it's all based on who controls the means of production. So everything in the modern age is commercialized and everything is purchasable. Practically what happens when you're employed in a job, your work is being purchased, which is why the idea is if you have a good degree, then your purchase power, what you can demand or what you can expect to get, that goes up. And if you're good at kicking a ball in certain ways, then you can play for Coventry City Football Club and earn more than someone who has studied accountancy, for instance. And if you play for Manchester United Football Club, you can earn more than probably the Prime Minister, if you're playing for the first team, at least. So everyone is an economic unit, and everyone is purchasable, and they present their abilities in the workplace. And if your abilities are no longer needed, just for instance, if there are more engineers applying for a job than there are applying for jobs than there are jobs, then your abilities, they have limited value. Everything is purchasable, everything is commercialized. Nowadays, water is sold. And even the water from your tap, you have to pay for it. So it was not imaginable at one point in time. I got that one free. Hope you're not going to charge me for it. But it was not imaginable one generation ago that drinking water would be purchased. What's going on in many countries of the world now is that people who have lived, their forefathers have lived in a tract of land for generations, and they take water from the local spring or the local well, and the government sells it to a company, and the company charges them to take water from that well. That's going on everywhere. In some places they had riots about that. Good for them. That you can't take our water and charge us for it. But they can. In most places they're doing that. So water, food, we just take it for granted that food is something that you buy. But previously most people grew their own food, and there wasn't it wasn't a purchasable item, just like I said, they said that the Vaishyas who are producing the grains, it's their duty to give grains to the barbers and the potters and the dhobis who wash cloth, so the Vaishyas, they produce the food, the grains, and then the dhobis, they serve all the members of the society, the barbers, they serve all members of the society, and the food is provided for everyone by the Vaishyas. You don't buy food. But we can't imagine nowadays a society in which you don't buy food. Land was not sold. The earth is our mother. You can't sell your mother. It could be that a king has got jurisdiction over some area, and they can grant land to some people. But you can't buy and sell land. This whole idea that everything is to be bought and everything is to be sold. And not only is food sold, but it's an agri-business. And there's speculation on futures, it's called. They're investing in food crops. And so it becomes a whole business. And when it becomes a business and profit is the motive, then the idea is not how to feed people, but how to get most money for the business. And so if in the course of your agri-business, you have to throw some poisonous chemicals in the food, in the crops that are growing, well, what does it matter? Because we have to grow the food, and then we'll get it certified as harmless to human beings, even though we're not really sure if it's harmless, because you can't see the long-term effects, except in the long term. But it's business, and in business, money is the object. And human welfare is not the object, because it's considered that money in and of itself is the object. People's welfare has become secondary to that, which is actually demoniac, but that is the rule of the land. That's the way, to a large extent, that more and more that is how society that's going on is going on. In India, there's propaganda against cow slaughter, not in this country. It's just accepted as normal. But cow slaughter won't stop in India. It's not going to stop because everything is an economic entity. Cows are also an economic entity. So a farmer who has an old cow, he can't afford to keep it and feed a cow that doesn't produce anything. If he keeps the cow, he has to pay for it. If he sells it, he gets money for it. What's he going to do? He's going to sell it. So it's a nice sentiment, and we have a few goshalas in which cows are protected by rich people who they're rich because they exploit people in other ways. But the massive cow slaughter goes on. It's impossible. As long as money is the center of everything, then you can't stop cow slaughter. Medicine is a massive business, not in here. The National Health Service is running on to some extent, but because it's running down day by day, then private practice is coming up as a good business. But in America, it's absolute, and in India, there's some sham of a government medical system, but it all runs on money, and it's a big business. People open hospitals not to benefit people, to make good money. People become doctors. People in India, it's a prime profession to be a doctor, and parents want their children to be doctors, not to benefit others, but because you earn a lot of money. It's big money. But medical aid should never be for financial reward, for money. That's it. Simple. I was trying to think of, keep it simple. It shouldn't be. If someone's sick, then they should be treated, whether they have money or they don't have money. That's the duty of the whole society, to look after its members. What about patents on medicines? If there's a medicine that's discovered that can help others, why should it be a matter of profit? You say intellectual rights. Actually, why should anything be patented? If someone's discovered something that's beneficial to human society, then let everyone utilize it. Why not? Because it's a money society. The pharmaceutical companies, they made research and they invested money into it. And so they think, now we have to make our profit. You see the mentality? A medicine has been discovered, which they say is going to help people. But it's to be marketed. It's the main thought is not how it can help people per se, but that this company has produced it and now they have to make a profit. The whole outlook is completely warped, but we just take it as normal. People, if they have the intelligence to produce such medicines or whatever else is for the benefit of human society, they should just share that for the benefit of others. That's what brahmanas do. They share their knowledge with others. But we've made something and we want to take advantage of that now to make money. Nothing should be patented. Everything, music, art, drama, it all runs on the money basis, and then it all degrades. Music, art, drama, there was a time when this was all for the glorification of God. But now it's all a business, and then it degrades generation by generation. And then pornography is a major business. How can that go on? It's horrible. In the name of art, music means some horrible sounds produced by mentally disturbed people for mentally disturbed people. It just hellish sounds. And it sells. And you make money. Everything is degraded. So, this chapter of, I started off by reading, Vitameva Kalonrinam Janmachara Gunodaya, that in Kali Yuga, wealth is the whole stimulus for all human activities. It's, people don't even think, they just presume that money, the whole money culture, this is human life. They don't even think that we could live in a different way. So one of Srila Prabhupada's, of course Srila Prabhupada's great gift was to introduce Krishna consciousness and the Hare Krishna mantra, but he wanted to give a whole way of life, a different way of life, because actually we can't really be Krishna consciousness as long as we're in money consciousness, and the whole society is money conscious. How do we escape from that? How do we escape from that? Srila Prabhupada wanted to set up Varnashram communities, but it's very difficult because devotees can't even imagine living in a society in which we all live simply and cooperate to serve Krishna. And they can't imagine living without what they think are the basic comforts of life. And they feel insecure unless they have money. So, although the solution is there, kale dosha nithe raj, this money culture, in these few minutes I'm trying to give some idea of how we're all so much conditioned by the money culture. But that's only one aspect of the whole syndrome that is Kali Yuga. And it's summarized by Shukadev Goswami as Kale Doshanidhi Rajan. Oh King, in Kali Yuga it's just an ocean of faults. He describes some of them. I can read a few more. I'll just read in English. A few more. Men Kale. Yes. Law and justice will be applied only on the basis of one's power. In other words, if you have money, you have justice. Men and women live together just out of sexual attraction. Success in business will depend on deceit. One will be considered a good woman or a good man depending on their sexual attraction. Someone will be called a brahmana because he has a thread. Hypocrisy will be accepted as virtue. Marriage will be arranged simply on... You like me? Yeah! Okay, let's get married. People will think having a hairstyle, that's real beauty, and so on and so on. The main goal of life is to fill your belly. So these are some of the symptoms of Kali Yuga that are mentioned. And it's all summarized. Kale dosha nithe rajan astihi. There's one good quality. Astihi eko mahan guna. One very good quality. Kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha parang vrajat. By chanting the names of Krishna, one can be liberated from this ocean of faults. Not only liberated from this, one can be liberated from the material world and go to the supreme abode of Krishna. But hearing also is required. Chanting and hearing. And together these affect cheto darpana marjanam, purification of consciousness. But if we remain in the consciousness that we are dependent on money, then we can never be fully dependent on Krishna. Unless we're fully dependent on Krishna, then our chanting doesn't fully purify us. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he was very concerned to establish Krishna-conscious society based on simple living and high thinking. The basis of the economy is dependence on the land, the cows, and Krishna. Cooperation, not competition. A society that brings people together, not that everyone is trying to exploit everyone else and everyone is selfish. There's a lot of propaganda against the caste system, and people think India, Hinduism means caste system, it's evil. But actually what degraded into a caste system is simply meant that people take different occupations and cooperate together. And by doing so, sve sve kama bharata sangsidhim labhate naraha. Everyone, by doing their own work, they can attain the highest perfection of life. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to make these communities live simply, produce our food, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. Many non-devotees have also tried to make such communities. Seeing that this, you don't have to be a great transcendentalist to see that this whole money culture is flawed in so many ways. So many materialists and religionists, they have attempted to set up simple living communities, but they haven't been successful. Many of them degraded into hippies just taking lots of drugs, and then infighting and non-cooperation. They mostly, such communities have not been successful for lack of a higher goal. And that higher goal that Srila Prabhupada gives is not simply to live simply, not simply to escape from the money culture, but Krishna consciousness. So excuse me if you got bored by all that talk. You thought, why are we having this lesson on economics and social values? Aren't we supposed to hear something about Krishna? But Srila Prabhupada did talk about all these things because this is required if we're actually going to make Krishna consciousness relevant in the world and not just simply some what people view as a harmless minority religion. But as long as we live in and by the money culture, we cannot but be influenced by it. So some devotees have to, it's not that we don't expect everyone just to immediately drive their car out to the country and then abandon it and live on the land, but some devotees have to do that. Otherwise, what happens if, unless we understand these points, that Kali Yuga is dominated by the money culture, then our Krishna conscious movement will suffer the same fate that all idealistic religions have suffered, which is to become commercialized. It's inevitable because our way of thinking is money, money, money. Who's got the most money is the best. And so we start to think that, well, a good preacher is one who lives a high life and who's got lots of rich disciples. I don't think anyone says that, but subconsciously we may tend to think that. If our values are, we live in the money culture and we think that people who have money are successful. And because we live in the money culture, it's so difficult to avoid it that practically we can't avoid all the pitfalls that Srila Prabhupada warned us against. For instance, having professional priests, professional kirtaniyas, because people are good at singing and they get invited to this festival and this that festival. They have to maintain their family. If they're all the time going to this festival and that festival, you have to give them some money. Then they become professional kirtaniyas because they're good at singing. They might not have any very good sadhana or very good understanding. They may not even be following all the principles, but because they can sing nice. And then because they have to maintain their job, they have to sing in a way that everyone likes, and then it just becomes an entertainment and commercial, and the whole thing goes to hell. How do you keep a good town president? Well, you have to pay him because he has to maintain his family, and then, you know, How much are you going to pay him? Well, I could be earning more outside. And even a temple president told me they were giving a pujari this, you know, I had to give him some money because he's a pujari for his family. He's a full-time pujari. And then after Janmashtami, where he stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning doing extra service, afterward he put in a requisition for overtime. Because it's the money culture. We become so much affected by it. So I know the issue of paying devotees is a complex one, but I'm just touching on it here. I'm not condemning anyone, but I'm just saying that it's practically impossible for us to avoid contamination by the money culture as long as we live according to its dictates. So Srila Prabhupada's solution is back to the land, live simply. It's difficult to do it within the money culture because all the laws concerning farming and all this are all set up for agribusiness, not for living simply. So it is difficult, but we have to find the ways and means to do that. And tomorrow I'm supposed to speak also, so I'll speak on more directly Krishna conscious topics, but I had to say this also. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Any question about this, please? Yeah.
I read in Srimad Bhagavatam it said that in Kali Yuga that the fruits and vegetables...
In Kali Yuga the fruits and vegetables will all become shriveled up. And if, actually they're getting bigger due to chemicals. But they're getting bigger, but they're getting the less nutrition and more poison in them.
And is that what Bhagavatam's alluding to? That it said that the foods and the fruits won't be able to nourish the human beings like they have done previously.
Well, as I said, the descriptions in the Bhagavatam, they're general. It's generalizations. One thing that I've noticed in the last couple of years, and I've mentioned that to others, and they all agree, is that mangoes aren't what they used to be. The mango season is coming. But they just don't, it's nothing special anymore. And many fruits, if you were blindfolded, you couldn't tell what it was, because they all taste the same. No flavor. So what's the cause for that? The mango should be something really good, but it's you can go through the whole mango season. Every time you look, it's mango, and then one after another. And this year, I just told the devotee, just don't bother buying them anymore because they're all useless. Yeah, guavas from Allahabad. You're not supposed to say Allahabad. You have to say Prayagraj. You're going to say Bharat instead of India. But yeah, they were famous. Amrud from Allahabad. But everything. I mean, the chapatis. Chapatis used to be something very succulent and tasty. But in India now, because they have all hybrids and chemically grown and green revolution, but can't get it. It's difficult to get a tasty chapati. So these are all symptoms of Kali Yuga. People are impious, and the result is that everything becomes less and less. All good things become diminished, and all bad things become increased. So I have to push on the Krishna consciousness movement. And within the Krishna consciousness movement, we have to be very careful not to let the influence of Kali in. You have to be very vigilant for that, because Kali is always ready to destroy everything in the form of wrong philosophies, especially. Wrong philosophy. From wrong philosophy comes wrong practice, and then everything's finished. Therefore, we should hear carefully what Srila Prabhupada says and stick to that. Then we'll be safe. Then anything else? All right, Hare Krishna.